Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve enjoying vacation this week, so we've got a best of. Sean Carey with you from the Sunbury Motors Studio, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Check out our show page on Facebook. Give us a like. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. And we're also at SteveJonesShow.com. You find 3 months of shows archived there. Catch up on some interviews you may have missed. And we're also doing that here on the radio and the podcast this week. Speaking of the podcast, it is available on both iTunes, Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. Go to either, search Steve Jones Show, and the live shows after they're live on WKOK will drop right into your smartphone and tablet, and of course, it is free. All-Star game tonight, Washington, D.C., Bryce Harper, dramatic fashion last night winning the home run derby on his home field. And now the burning question is, what is the deal with Manny Machado? Possibly connected with a trade to the Philadelphia Phillies, but there are other teams in pursuit of Machado. So trade buzz at an all-time high. Other teams we've been hearing in the mix other than the Phillies are Milwaukee, Arizona, and the Dodgers. And within the last couple of hours, the Dodgers have emerged as a clear leader, and there could be an official announcement as early as tomorrow. As there are various reports saying that the Orioles do have the parameters of a deal in place. And of course, the Dodgers have been in need of a shortstop. They lost their franchise player, Corey Seager, to Tommy John surgery earlier this year. Machado currently at batting at .315, 24 home runs, 96 games. Also did return to his original position of shortstop earlier this season. So barring a snag that could happen last minute, we'll have to wait and see if Manny Machado goes to the Los Angeles Dodgers. And that was according to a post earlier this afternoon from MLB writer Bob Nightingale from USA Today. It was says it's according to a baseball official with direct knowledge of the deal. So we'll definitely keep you posted on that. Major League Baseball All-Star Game tonight. Scherzer versus Sale will be your starting pitchers. See if we can get some good pitching hitting matchups in the first couple of innings before the subs come in after 8 tonight down in D.C. So we will have some baseball conversation on the show today. We'll have replays of interviews from baseball writers from CBSSports.com. Matt Snyder later this hour. R.J. Anderson will join Steve at 4:35. And sandwiched in between, we'll have some college football talk as well with one of the best in the business, Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart. Replay of Steve's interview with Tony from about a month and a half ago. We'll have that at the start of next hour. Well, one of the tops in Penn State. Of course, we're talking about the rivalry in wrestling. And this was Steve's thoughts not too long ago about the one and only Kale Sanderson.
I want to talk about Kale Sanderson for a moment. Kale Sanderson, Altoona has this dinner every year. And Neil Riddell's been a driving force behind this forever. They've been able to get some incredible speakers there. Joe Paterno, James Franklin, Bill Raftery, Bobby Knight. Well, this time around, they were able to get Kale Sanderson to go. And Corey Geiger wrote an outstanding piece in the Altoona Mirror about Kale's appearance there. And he told a story, and as you know, when it comes to motivating, like motivating things about games, Sean will be the first to tell you, I think that's all a bunch of mumbo jumbo rivalries and all that. I think it's mumbo jumbo. And I always have thought that. And of course, a lot of, no, it's a big rivalry. It meets about place. Okay. So Sanderson, Kale is at this dinner in Altoona. And Cale is not, look, Cale is not a guy that likes to talk about himself at all. Doesn't enjoy it. It's not his deal. You know, he is somebody that I'm very comfortable interviewing Cale now because I know him better. And because when you're interviewing someone, you have to understand what gets them to talk. And so you don't sit there and go, well, tell me about your career and tell me about, please. You know, that's not what he wants to talk about. And I think the last time I sat down and interviewed Cale was that piece we did on Zane Rutherford. And yeah, and you know, and we were kidding around, laughing about different things. And we did the interview, bang, 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 nice and efficient, done, which he likes. You know, and then you move on. So Cale Sanderson got up in front of the group in Altoona and told how he motivates his wrestlers at Penn State. He said he and the other coaches, and he has a great staff. Cale talks about his staff a lot. I think a lot of people should talk about his staff more, too. He said he and the other coaches do not talk about hating the opponent. They also do not talk about how big the rivalry is. And they don't tell their student athletes things such as the whole world is against them. You know, I mean, every time I hear that stuff, I always think, oh, for goodness sakes. I mean, Sean, you know, it drove the suit nuts that I thought that way, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it drove him nuts. He's like, oh, no, you don't understand. No, I've been around it forever. Like, I'm on practice fields and stuff. That's not what they do to motivate people. The really good coaches don't do that.
There is such a thing, you know, I was thinking of the classic movie, you know, Newt Rockne, All-American, you know, the classic speech, win one for the Gipper. But, you know, each team has a different dynamic as to how you can reach to them so they can reach out to, you know, tap into their greatest potential and do what they can, the best they can for the team.
It's interesting, but Cale Sanderson talked about what's the things I've talked about forever. He said those are fleeting motivational tools, and he doesn't believe in them. Here's his exact quote to sum it all up. If you want to win, you don't need a fancy why. Just win because you want to. Now, that doesn't mean just showing up. It means, do you have the willingness to get up at 5 a.m. and run? Do you have the willingness to get in the weight room? Do you have the discipline to do all of this? Do you put in the extra time in the wrestling room because there's a move that you're not quite sure about yet? Or do you put the extra time in the wrestling room because, you know what, when they do that, I don't counter it well? What do I need to do to counter it better? Okay? That is the just win because you want to. No shortcuts. And that goes with anything in life. You want to be successful at something, you've got to throw yourself into it because you want to. Because you want to do it. And since you want to do it, you want to get up early and run. You want to get up early and get your day rolling and get to the weight room. You want, because you want to win, you get in to the treatment time that you're supposed to be at earlier. Because you want to win, you'll do hot tub, cold tub. Because you want to win, you'll save that little extra and take that extra jump shot. Throw that extra pass. Figure out one more time, what's that counter I need to do to make sure that if it happens to me, I can counter and still win. That's the want to right there. That isn't, oh boy, here we go. We're playing Ohio State. Now, that's great for the fans and everything like that, but I've always said over and over again, when does that stuff end? That stuff ends the first time you get smacked in the mouth. So you get smacked in the face, figuratively, not literally, but figuratively. You're like, okay, suddenly out of nowhere, it's like, oh, I got to do, oh, I got, okay, I got to recover here. How do I do this? That's where the want to comes in. you want to be that good. You want to be that good as a team. Everyone marvels over and over again at going to Lift for Life and seeing all these Penn State student-athletes, football players. Wow, look how great they look after the month of June, which is a critical month for them. You know, look how sharp they look. They get into training camp. Okay, they're not running extra laps or anything like that. They've already done that. They've run hills. They've worked in the sand pit. They've been in the weight room. They put in the 7-on-7 time. They've organized the 5 a.m. runs. Basketball. You know, last year, Patrick Chambers, last year, asked all of his players to not just come in for the second six-week session. He asked them to come in and be a part of what was going on the first six-week session and the second. So they were here from the Wednesday after Mother's Day all the way through, because he said that's the one way to come together as a team and get better. And they did that. That's the want to. That's the want to. Not the, oh, playing Ohio State, hate those guys. Oh, going to play Pitt, hate those guys. Oh, the rivalry, huge, incredible. Okay? The world is against us. Well, the world can be against you, but guess what? You get out there. I mean, when what was it, Martin? When Martin suddenly put a Bo Nickel to his back, he wasn't sitting there saying the world's against me. He wasn't sitting there saying I hate Ohio State. He wasn't sitting there saying it's a big rivalry with them. I got to beat him, right? He said, "What the heck do I do to get out of this and turn them?" And boom, he turned them. Okay, that's the want to, because he had worked on it. He had worked on it, and that's. There's such we get into, there's so much talk on today, so much talk, whether it's writing or it's shows or TV, talk, right? And there's so many things that are yapped about, and then you take some time, if you're really into what you're doing, and you pull somebody aside that actually knows, and you find out it's mumbo jumbo. That's why I've always had this anti-mumbo-jumbo attitude on here, because I've been around it my whole life. We're I hate them, and rivalries, blah, 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 blah. Ah. You get in a football game, bang. Guy get knocked down on your backside on a pursuit play. Guess what? All that mumbo-jumbo about, you know, because part of that during the course of the week, you know, rivalries and things, the world's against the whole thing, yeah, that's to get you to practice harder. Not in the game. Well, guess what? If you already want to, you don't need that. Do you think Zane Rutherford needed to, I can't stand the Sorensen kid from Iowa? For all we know, that off the mat, they're good friends. I don't know. I'd have to ask Zane that. Never have asked him. Okay, I'll give you something like a mumbo-jumbo piece. I was talking to Bill O'Brien on Saturday. And we were talking for a while, and I said, hey, I want to ask something about quarterbacks. Says, you want to take a look at Trace McSorley and see how McSorley handled things. And he says, you know, Jonesy, what do you think of him? I said, well, I said, look, I said, the thing you'll see right away is he's got footwork, vision, and he's become an accurate thrower of the football. Okay, so that's what I told him before he took a look at him. All right, so then he comes back, and I said, I want to ask you something about quarterbacks. I said, is it making it more difficult for you to evaluate quarterbacks how the college game is being played? And he says, no. I said, I'm going to go back, he said, to what you said to me before I looked at McSorley. You're right. I can see his footwork. I can see his accuracy. I can see his vision and what he's doing. He says, so those are basics I have already to look at him. I said, well, what about the part where everybody talks about the difficulty of going under center? He goes, he says, Jonesy, we can teach that. Yeah, I feel like there are times where this show like kills myths. That was the big suit destroyer. Like all these things he had thought, like, nah, it's not really true. And that's the way it is. There's so much talk, you have to fill it up with, you know, oh boy, you know, Russ against Steph tonight. Like, going, well, there are a few other people playing in the game, too. I mean, it's not going to be a duel to the death between two guys at center court. But again, Cale Sanderson. Sanderson told about how he motivates his wrestlers at Penn State. He and other coaches do not talk about hating the opponent. He and his coaches do not talk about rivalries. He and his coaches do not tell his athletes that the whole world is against them. What he does tell them is this: if you want to win, you don't need a fancy why. Just win because you want to win. Now, there's a lot that goes into, there's a lot of want that goes into the finally getting to the moment that opens the door for you to win. And it's because you want to do all of those things. You want to watch the extra tape. You want to talk, have meetings with your coaches and your teammates. You want to have, hey, that's all part of the want to win. You have to want to do all of that. I mean, even, you know, even to quote something, a job like I do, all right? One of the most important things, I want to prepare for games. I want to be at practice. I want to look at tape. I want to do charts. I want to take a look at stat breakdowns. I may use 1% of it, but if I use it in the right spot, it makes the broadcast better for you when you're listening. You have to want to do that. You have to want to. And that's what he tells his athletes. I mean, you know why Trace McSorley is so successful? He is working, and this comes, if you hear somebody say he's worked so hard, that's the want. Trace McSorley wanted to be a good quarterback. Trace McSorley wanted to put in the extra time in the weight room. Trace McSorley wanted to put extra time in with the speed coach. Trace McSorley wanted to put more time in on tape. Trace McSorley wanted to put more time in meetings. Trace McSorley wanted to organize 7-on-7s. Trace McSorley wanted to put in extra time after practice to make plays. Ask that extra question. Wanted to listen to his coaches. That's the other part, too. You have to want to listen. Now, everybody has their own personalities. Cale Sanderson's done a brilliant job of finding those personalities, working with those personalities, bringing out the best in those personalities, and making them understand that the road to winning starts with you. It doesn't start with the other guy. Part of wanting to be is wanting to put in everything you have to get there. I want to be there because I want to get up at 5 a.m. and run. I want to be a champion because I want to get into the weight room at 6. I want to be because I'm going to take care of my classwork. I want to be because, okay, I'm going to spend the extra time. I need, you know, I'm having trouble with this move. I want to be great, so I'm going to work to perfect it. I want to work on that counter because it's hurt me before and it's never going to hurt me again. Yeah, there's a lot of time unseen by virtually everyone outside of a program that is the true want that then leads up to the part you do see. What has made Trace McSorley great? All that film work he's done because he wants to be good. He wants to be able to break it down. Hey, all that time he spent in the weight room, he wants to be strong and tough. All the time he's put in with a speed coach because he wants to be quicker. Because he wants to win. Those are all elements he needs because he wants to win. I told the story on the Mississippi State broadcast at Madison Square Garden about being at the practice gym on Saturday before that game. And Tony Carr was in there, and so was John Hara. John Hara was the only two in the gym at the time. John Hara was working on free throws. You notice how John Hara missed only one free throw in the month of March? One. And Tony Carr was working on his free throws because that had slumped a bit. and he was going around the horn. Three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point shot, three-point shot. And guess what? It came back to him in New York. Three-point shot and free throws. And you know what? That's because he wanted to. He wanted to be great. He wanted to win. And he knew that part of the want was the part that nobody saw. Now, I saw it because I got to go. Okay? It's that want. It's not that, oh, we're Shikellamy. We can't stand Sealands Grove. They're our rival. All right, that's great for the fans. It gets more people out. There's no doubt about that. But the actual winning of the game? So winning of the game is the want. Hey, it's, and that's the other part, too. If you have personal pride in yourself in anything, I don't care if you're Tom over at Sunbury Motors or if you're Adam Purdy, right? You're Corey over at Brewers Outlet. You know, why are they successful all the time? Because they want it badly. Tom wants to have the best dealership out there. Adam wants to be the best insurance agency out there. Corey wants the best beverage center out there. They want that. So they're working all the time. Right? It's not just in sports. They're working all the time to figure out how can they be better because of the want. Why do I do this? Because I want to be the best I can be. That, it's not rivalry.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Be great to hear Justin Michaels back on the radio. He is going to return with Greg Wetzel to 100.9 The Valley, your home for Lewisburg Green Dragons football. A little over a month away, Friday night, August 24th. Start of the high school football season. Of course, we'll have the Shikellamy Braves here on WKOK. Sealands Grove Seals on Eagle 107. And Steve is back on Monday following vacay. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai, North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget our podcast available on both iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. You can type in Steve Jones Show, subscribe, and all the shows will drop right to your smartphone or tablet, and then you can hear them, listen to them on demand anytime, anywhere. Maybe you do have some vacation planned or heading out the rest of the week like Steve did with his family, and you want to catch up on some older shows. You can do that anytime, anywhere. All right, so we're going to dive into some more baseball talk this hour, next hour, too, with two of the great sports writers, baseball writers, specifically for CBSSports.com. Also, 406. It was great to hear Mr. College Football Tony Barnhart chat with Steve about a month and a half ago. We'll replay that at the start of next hour. But in the meantime, we've got Major League Baseball conversation. This guy made his first appearance here on the show a few months back, Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com.
Now let's talk about Major League Baseball with Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com. Matt, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, good to be here.
Okay, Matt, how would you assess the opening 40 games? I mean, we're essentially at the quarter pole right now. So at the quarter pole, what strikes you?
I think Shohei Ohtani is probably the best story, and I love it. It's outstanding the way he's acclimated himself to Major League Baseball. Yankees and Red Sox are both awesome and maybe even better than everybody thought they would be, and everybody thought they'd be great. And, of course, the Dodgers. Yuck. Just terrible. And that is kind of – I mean, they've had injuries, but even despite the injuries, they've been bad. So they're in a bad, bad way, and given that Corey Seager's out for the season, given that Clayton Kershaw's hurt right now, given that Kenley Jansen is getting better but still doesn't seem all the way back to what he was the last few years, given that Justin Turner is coming off a broken wrist, and a lot of times that ruins seasons, I don't have confidence that they're actually going to bounce back. I think they might be cooked.
Very well could be. Speaking of cooked, $11 million essentially is going to be an 80-game suspension for Robinson Cano for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy in Major League Baseball. What were your thoughts when you saw that one come down the line?
I was just sad. I hate it because, in a way, for some reason, there's a double standard in the general public eye when it comes to baseball versus, let's say, football and PEDs. People don't freak out as much when a football player gets nagged, gets nailed for four games. But in baseball, everybody goes with confirmation bias and just says, hey, see, they're all cheaters. And I hate it. So I'm just sad. The Hall of Fame caliber player, but when I do get a Hall of Fame vote, my rule is going to be if you were suspended for PEDs when you played, I'm not going to vote for you, but if you never were, then I'm not going to try to guess. So, like, I would be yes on Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, but unfortunately with Cano he's using my rule, which I feel like is the only way to be consistent and fair, I would be a no on Cano now. So, like I said, I'm just kind of sad about it.
A lot of pressure when you sign the kind of contract that he signed. And I'm not making an excuse here at all. But what kind of pressure are they under to perform, considering the numbers that they're getting and the length of a 10-year contract like he got?
You know, it's not the NFL where they can just cut guys. I kind of feel like once you sign it, the pressure should kind of be off. I know people want to live up to it, and I know John Lester, for example, talked about his first year with the Cubs, how he thought he had a bad year because he signed that huge deal, and it was his first year, and there was a lot of pressure, and he put too much pressure on himself. But you kind of feel like by now on Cano's deal, there should be basically like no pressure at all anymore. You've got that much money in the bank. You've got that much more money coming. They can't take it away from you. So I feel like it should be off, but, you know, maybe guys do put extra pressure on themselves to try to live up to it. And, you know, we know that the Mariners have the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball. So maybe there's a little extra there.
All right. I want to go back to you being a Hall of Fame voter. You mentioned that if they've tested positive, that will be a litmus test for you. Fair enough word to help. Where does that put David Ortiz for you?
I'm going to be a yes on Ortiz, and it's because it was a report about the 2003 test, which were supposed to be anonymous. We don't have the rest of that list. We don't know exactly what transpired. We don't know if he was definitely doing it for sure. I'm not comfortable going with that and saying I'm a no on him. So I'm going to be a yes on David Ortiz.
See, I feel the same way you do. When it's something that's leaked, there's prominent names on it, and you and I don't know what they were testing for.
Correct. And then he went the whole rest of his career and never got nailed for anything. So
right.
As far as I'm concerned, to me, that pretty much didn't happen.
Right. Okay, I find that's interesting. You and I, obviously, although it's closer for me, did not grow up in the Babe Ruth era. but it's closer for me, Matt, okay? when you see what Ohtani is doing, where I go out and I pitch 7-8 strong innings one day and then I'm clubbing one out the next, what are we seeing here that, you know, that is so different and so impressive?
Just a special generational type talent to be able to do that at the same time. And keep in mind, when Babe Ruth played, Not only was the game segregated, but there was less weight training. There was less specialization in terms of pitching. Basically, while the game was never easy, it was much easier then. And he still didn't even do it at the same time. He only hit on daisy pitch when he was in the Red Sox rotation. Once he went to the Yankees and became a position player, he stopped pitching. Ohtani's doing it at once. I mean, he's DHing three times a week. He's pitching one time a week. And, well, I don't think he's going to be good enough on, let's say, Silver Slugger territory because he's only playing three times a week. Pitching-wise, he's probably going to make like 25 to 30 starts. So he couldn't get big run at Cy Young. But let's say he makes 25 starts and he pitches to a 3.0 ERA. And he, hitting-wise, he hits 320 with a 400 on-base percentage and hits 20 home runs. That's an MVP-caliber player right there when you put that book together. So it's just... words can't do justice to how impressive it is to me what he's been doing so far.
Through the first 40 games, it's the same impression, that general impression that people have had over the last season or two, that there are normally three outcomes: home run, walk, strikeout.
Yeah.
Is that too gross a generalization as somebody who observes it very closely? And if it isn't too gross a generalization, what changes would you consider?
I think it's getting to the point where it's too much of those three. It falls in player at an all-time low. If you take away strikeouts, walks, and home runs, it's at an all-time low this season historically. And that's not good. You need traffic. Now, I do think home runs are action plays, so maybe we shouldn't focus so much on that. But with so many walks and strikeouts, it's getting to the point, people that go to the game, you want to see action. And as Crash Davis taught us in Bull Durham, strikeouts are fascists. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, people talk about making four strikes for a strikeout, and I just hate the idea of that, because that's just that changes everything that we've always known throughout our lives. Maybe they need to heighten the mound or lower the mound some. I mean, remember after the Bob Gibson 1.12 ERA year where they lowered the mound. Maybe they need to lower it again to get more balls in play. I mean, that's not going to do anything to the walks, but guys might start putting the ball in play more. Generally speaking, I'd like to see guys get more aggressive. I know they'd like to get into the bullpens early and get the starter out of there, but as good as bullpens are nowadays, maybe that's not the best approach anymore. The Red Sox, for one team this year, have said that one of their changes in approach has been to be more aggressive. The first strike you get, swing, hit it, put it in play. I'd like to see guys get more aggressive instead of just standing up there and taking and trying to work the counts. If you get a strike on the first pitch, hit it.
Yeah, well, Carl Yastrzemski was the American League batting champion in 1968. It was easy to figure out that he was because he was the only player in the American League to hit over 300. So they lowered the mound after that. All right. Now, the next part is, obviously, the Supreme Court made its ruling yesterday. It was on states' rights. I mean, they didn't legalize gambling where suddenly everybody can go out and place a bet today. Major League Baseball has been going around with the NBA lobbying legislatures. How important would it be for them to, quote, get a slice of this, even if it's that, like, mythical 1%?
I think that's what it's all about because, I mean, Major League Baseball can talk about integrity of the game all they want, but the players and managers are still going to be forbidden from gambling on the games. A fan gambling on baseball has nothing at all to do with the integrity of the game. So it's all about the dollar signs, and Major League Baseball is raking money in, but, you know, I wouldn't begrudge them from trying to get every avenue they can. So that's what it's all about. They're going to try to get a piece of the pie, and ultimately they probably will.
Next one is this. The Phillies are off to a very good start, and we know with Gabe Kapler the importance of analytics, and that's what he sold the Phillies on when he went in for his job interview. It's interesting to watch how this plays out. What have you thought of the Phillies so far?
Well, I mean, remember that he had a rough first week.
Yes, he did.
He did. He's learning on the fly that you need to while analytics are good and forward thinking is good, this is not a video game, and you still have individuals in the locker room. There was no reason to not play Odubel Herrera on opening day. That was stupid. Not having Get Ready come in, that was stupid. But it seems like he's had enough self-awareness to kind of react and adapt. And that's good. And overall, I like this mix. You know, you got Nola and Arrieta top the rotation. The offense has some young and exciting guys. And I feel like Hoskins is going to start to hit for more power again. So there's areas where they can even get better. I mean, the bullpen, there's been some speed bumps there, but I think he'll get that figured out. I think they're going to be a wild card contender all season. I would be surprised if they kind of fell off a cliff here. I think they're good. I think they have staying power.
I agree with you. I think they do too. Now let's go to the other end of the state, the Pirates. Now, it doesn't hurt to be in that division, but what have you thought about them so far?
Very good start. I don't think it's sustainable. I think they have a lot of guys who are playing over their heads right now. I love Corey Dickerson, but I don't see him keeping this up. Moran, I don't see him keeping this up. Cervelli's out of his mind right now. I think, unlike the Phillies, I don't think they have staying power. It's going to be a tough top three there. I ultimately think the Brewers are the third best team, but they're good. I think the Cubs are going to win the division, but I think the Cardinals are very good as well. So I think the Pirates kind of settle into fourth. Maybe they play around 500 for a little bit, but ultimately they probably, you know, high 70s in wins. I do think everybody was way too down on them when they traded Cole and McCutcheon. Only 1 year left of McCutcheon. Cole, there just wasn't – something wasn't right with the mix with Gerrit Cole in Pittsburgh, and we see how he's taken off in Houston. So I think we probably overreacted a lot, and I said we because I was in on that too. I think we probably overreacted to those moves, but overall I still don't think that they're going to be a playoff contender come September.
You and I have seen – you mentioned the Yankees and the Red Sox in your initial answer, Matt, and – for the most part, when you look at their lineups, they're homegrown lineups, but they made key additions to it. The Yankees were able to trade for Giancarlo Stanton to go with their homegrown players. The Red Sox were able to sign J.D. Martinez to go with their homegrown lineup. The Pirates say they're under a budget, yet you and I both know every team received a $50 million windfall this year.
Yep.
Does it bother other
Correct.
Owners that they don't see people investing in players like the Pirates just hold on to the money and don't do anything with it?
I'd be surprised if that bothered some of the large market owners because they can still get all the players they want.
Right. Sure.
I mean, maybe there might be a little bit of, hey, why am I kicking you money in revenue sharing if you're just going to pocket it? Maybe there might be some of that, but I don't think that they would ever say anything publicly because they need their solidarity right now. The players are going to be ready to fight come next CBA after the way free agency went this past year. And you've already got Major League Baseball cracking down on stupid crap like not letting Wilson Contreras wear his Venezuelan flag sleep on his arm anymore. Right. So it's going to get contentious. So I think there might be internal grumbling, but they're not going to say anything publicly because they're going to need to stand together.
And how contentious do you think the next CBA will be?
I'm worried that we're going to have a season impacted in a big way. I don't know what the answers are. It used to work. Like, if you look at Albert Pujols, for example, by the end of his career, he will have made as much money as he's probably worth. It was just unbalanced. Like, he was drastically underpaid for the Cardinals. Now he's grossly overpaid. But it all worked out. It finally got to the point that the owners were saying, well, wait a minute. Why are we overpaying for their decline years? And they stopped doing it. Okay, well, now you have issues because Carlos Correa didn't even make $1 million last year. Chris Bryant made $1 million exactly in his MVP year. But the line of thinking was the players, just be patient. Once you hit free agency, you're going to get yours, and you'll be overpaid for the second half of your career. Well, if they get rid of that, now we have a big problem, and the players are drastically underpaid for 6 years, and then they're not getting overpaid for the free agency years, and Major League Baseball is swimming in record revenues right now, over $10 billion in profit last year. So it's going to get ugly. The players are going to dig their heels in. The owners are going to dig their heels in, and again, I am legitimately worried.
And if they get the integrity fees in states, it's going to be much more than $10 billion when it's all said and done.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know
Matt,
what?
An absolute pleasure.
I'm a players
really
guy. I'm a players guy. I want the players to – they're the ones earning it. This is – it's not like any other business. I know people always want to compare it like, oh, well, teachers, docs. No. This is special. These guys are specially talented. They're the talent. They need to be compensated as such. But anyway, sorry to go off on a tangent.
Oh, no. But it's entertainment. So if you and I pay, yeah. If they're going to give, let's give an example, Tom Cruise $20 million to do the next Mission Impossible, which comes out this summer, the reason is they think he's a draw to get people into the theater to watch.
Correct.
And they'll make their money back. Well, that's why, for example, you trade for Giancarlo Stanton, absorb that contract, because it's going to fill Yankee Stadium and win.
And why doesn't anybody ever complain about musicians or actors and how much they make? It always has to be athletes. And then when it's just, oh, that's too much. Why? Well, that's just too much. Why? People are paying to watch them.
Right. They're paying to watch, but you know, here's the difference, though. The difference is you and I, based on, let's keep the Tom Cruise thing going here with Mission Impossible, since the movie's coming out this summer. Okay, you and I don't know what bad days he had on the shoots. We see all the good stuff because it's cut together. With sports,
that's true.
See slumps.
Yep, that's true. That's a great point. So when Stanton goes 0-for-4 with 4 strikeouts, then that's a problem because he's getting paid too much to do that. Yep.
Right. Yeah, then he hits 2 home runs against the Red Sox, and they can't pay him enough.
Well, then it's just, well, no, that's, he should be doing that.
Yeah, that's right, Matt. It's about time. That's exactly what he should be doing, yeah, for the amount of money he's getting.
He should be doing that.
Right? Plus, it's publicized as to how much they get. We know what the salary of every player is. It's published.
Yeah, and in a way, you kind of wish that it wasn't, because then there wouldn't be so much consternation about it. The owners can afford it. I mean, everybody, trust us, the owners can definitely afford to pay these salaries. Otherwise, they would not have offered them.
Let me put it, yes, I've always said that. You know, when somebody complained to me once about Ryan Howard's salary on this show, I said, look, he did not put them in a room, hold them hostage, and release them one at a time.
Correct.
Until he got the number. They
Correct.
Gave him the number. And believe me, if you're an owner of a major league sports team, you have not taken a vow of poverty.
Correct. Even the poorest owner in Major League Baseball can afford to shell out hundreds of millions.
Absolutely. Matt, thanks so much. Really appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. That is Matt Snyder, Major League Baseball writer for CBSSports.com.